Welcome to the What's Your Weird Story podcast.
Everyone has at least one good story.
And some of us have stories that are just to the left of normal.
We're interested in the ones that push the boundaries of what we can perceive.
Stories that defy explanations.
Stories with an air of mystery.
Stories we might not share.
For fear of being thought of differently.
But don't worry. We're all friends here. So, what's your weird story? Hello, Weirdsville. You have joined us once again on the What's Your Weird Story podcast. Thank you very much. I am one of your hosts, Adam Beebe, and with me today is, as always, Barry Johnston.
Hello, everyone.
And we are graced with the presence of our semi-regular host, co-host, and special correspondent and local Bigfoot expert, Jeff Hubbard.
Hello, friends.
So what we've got for you guys today is it's kind of a odds and ends, hodgepodge kind of, that was a little difficult for me to say, kind of a thing. We've got your write-in stories. I guess we'll just get right to it because I can't find a good segue for it. Well, yeah, we've got Barry and Jeff here, and Jeff is going to be reading your write-in stories, and then we have at the end we've got a local to our hometown crime discussion of a recent development.
Pretty cool and exciting
true crime story.
A cool little look into a strange little town.
Yeah. Our ever-growing, stranger and stranger little town.
Yeah, yeah.
And Jeff was Jeff brought that to our attention, and so we sat down and we had a discussion about the events and everything, and it's it was pretty cool. So this is a mixed bag. It's really cool. We get to show you that, hey, you know, yes, we are listening to you, all everything that you send in, that you write in, and we want to share your stories. If you don't want to be interviewed, because some people are shy, if you don't want to be interviewed, that's okay. So we've got some write-in stories. We've got one from Ellen and from Max and from Thomas and just a couple of others that are just some great stuff from our Facebook and from email and all of this through the various social media outlets. So yeah, so let's get to that mail and your stories and with the voice of the listener, Mr. Jeff Hubbard.
Thank you, gentlemen. This is from Ellen in North Carolina. We have had some weird stuff happen. The model horses in my sister's closet would be galloping on the shelves in the middle of the night for a while. I wondered what on earth she was doing, but then I finally asked her, and she was lying in bed terrified when it was happening. Then my nephew was born. She had a huge teddy bear that would move around his room. She also heard voices on the baby monitor. And then one night, she went into his room, and the teddy bear was backwards in the rocking chair, rocking. Ooh. So yeah. She gave the teddy bear one of my horseback riding students. When I think about it, it always involves Susan. Another time, she was in her bathroom with the door locked, and something wrote on the fogged-up mirror. Looked like "I see you" written backwards.
Ooh. Okay, so this is when she was young? Is this when she was
Okay, so I can give a little bit of backstory to this. This is Ellen, who is an ex-girlfriend of mine. We dated years ago, and we've been able to be friends, which is really cool. Anyway, one weird thing is about Ellen. It's not like a weird thing about her, but her dad, herself, and she has two little sisters who are twins, are all born on the same day.
Really?
Yeah. her mom was not, but there was five people in there, her family, four of them all born on the same day.
What the hell, man? That's rare. Holy
That's
shit.
Really crazy. Yeah, yeah. So, like, 2 years after Ellen was born, her two sisters were born same day.
Wow, man.
And wow. Same day as their dad. So, also, I dated her for probably 8 months or something and never met her dad. Because he was always out of town, busy or whatever. So, anyway, when they were little, they shared a room. And at night, they would hear this sound of what sounded like galloping horses coming from the closet. And they're a horse family, you know, they have all sorts of horses. They have a stable. They train, you know, people how to ride, and they break horses and train horses and all that stuff.
Right.
And so they have these little, you know, fancy toy horses that girls have. I don't know what they're called, but there's, you know, they're like a high quality, realistic toy brand that are like collectible and stuff. But they had a bunch of those, and they had them on shelves in the closet. And at night, they moved around.
Wow.
They came alive and they moved around. And like, I remember hearing this story a long time ago, and which is why I reached out to Ellen, asked her if she wanted to be on the show. And she's a nurse, and she teaches, you know, equestrian writing and all that stuff. So she's super busy. So she didn't have time to be on, but she wrote in this little brief little story for us to read and go over. And so, yeah, so that happened when they were like really, really little, probably like 5, 6, 7, 8 area, that range.
Wow, that's spooky, man.
Yeah. That is really weird.
Yeah, and I just heard about the voices on the baby monitor and the teddy bear. But I think it's funny that she gave it away to somebody, one of the equestrian students. I wonder if she said thing.
that's freaky, dude. That's freaky.
So yeah, so it's just, you know, it's cool stuff. So Ellen, thank you for writing in and letting us share that story on your behalf, because those are really cool stories that I remembered, and also some new ones there that I didn't know about. It was really awesome. So
yeah, thank you, Ellen. Great stuff.
Cool. And that's a great story.
Yep. And thank you for reading in for Ellen, Jeff. You sound exactly like her.
So. That's what I was shooting for.
Jeff had her. And, yeah. No. Good. All right. Thanks again.
This is from Max in Virginia. While on beach vacation a few years ago in Cherry Grove, South Carolina, that's North Myrtle Beach, a 3D diamond-shaped flying object, like a saucer but not exactly, saw a light blinking in the distance over the ocean, saw the object move up in the sky very rapidly, and almost to the top point of the night sky above. It stopped for a few seconds and then started moving towards us while we were sitting and standing on our balcony. It came all the way to us, stopped for a few seconds while I glared at it in disbelief and pure amazement. Then it continued on right over the condo building. The windows were tinted, so I couldn't see inside it, but I have the object forever etched in my mind. It was a rather sophisticated one, a life-changing event for me, taught me to believe again. Eyes to the sky.
Love it. Love it.
That's awesome.
And we love UFO stories. And yeah, that we is, do. And I you know, the theory about them popping up out of the ocean, I love that idea also. Don't know if that's what happened in this case, but it makes me think of that. And that's one thing about the UFO thing is that it's such a broad topic, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what could it be? You know, is it alien? Is it, you know, from Earth that we've, you know, stumbled upon some crazy, you know, form of sophisticated flying, and are we working on new technology? You know, is that what these exercises are? You know, I don't know, but it's cool. It's cool stuff. We appreciate that.
I think the answer to that, Barry, is yes.
Yeah.
It's all those things.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So this is from Max, who we got a hold of through, it was through Facebook, and he is going through some, he's having some health issues right now, so that's why he wasn't able to be on and actually talk to us. So we wish Max speedy recovery and good health.
Absolutely.
Very soon. And we thank you for sharing your story with us. It was really cool. And he's in Abingdon, Virginia, which is coincidentally the place that I always, if I'm going to make a 2-day trip, then when I drive down to see my mom and family there in North Carolina, it's a pretty long drive when you're doing it solo. Sometimes I'll stop there. Okay. I'll stop along the way and just get a hotel room and crash for the night and be well rested.
Uh-huh.
And Abingdon is the place that I always stop because it's about right halfway there.
Cool.
And small world, huh?
Small world, yeah. Man. That's cool. Yeah, we appreciate him writing in. And again, for you folks out there that are, you know, sitting on a story that you don't feel like coming on and talking about, please send us in something, and Mr. Hubbard will read it, and we'll take a stab at trying to unlock some of the fun nature of it. You know,
yeah. Every day I get a text from Jeff saying, "Do I have anything new? Do I have anything new?" So help him out, and he gets bored working on laws at the state capitol. So help him out, write it in, and. Let us, you know, give us your story, and so we can share it with the world, and he can read it in your stead, and you can tell him, even if you want him to read it in a specific accent, you can even do that if you like. Otherwise, he'll just do his charming Oaky accent as it is,
and a charming one it is.
Yes. All right. Thanks again, Max. We wish you a speedy recovery. Hey Barry,
yeah.
Have you ever seen a goat sucker?
What?
Goat sucker, chupacabra.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Have you ever seen one of those?
I haven't seen one personally, but I've heard about them.
Yeah, me too. If anybody's got a goat sucking story, wait. If you got a goat sucker story, we want to hear it. If you got a Bigfoot story, we want to hear it. If you got a Loch Ness monster story, or a Lake Champlain story, or Ogopogo story, or an Oingo Boingo story, wait. That was an '80s band. Anyway, you got a weird cryptid story, we want to hear it.
I didn't even know what a cryptid was, man.
Yeah, dude, cryptids—they're like the animals that haven't been necessarily proven by science. They're the ones on the edge, you know. They're not necessarily known animals, but they're known animals. We don't have the bodies or anything like that. So they're kind of like half myth, half story, based in reality, but still in that weird mystery area that we don't know about yet. Cryptids are fun.
All right, this is from Nina from Connecticut. I lived in a haunted house when I was younger. I have many stories if you want to hear them. I had awoken to hearing my grandmother's usual TV show blaring through the house one early morning. Coming down the stairs, I look into the living room and notice my grandmother alone watching TV. I decided to go and keep her company. Upon entering the living room, I close the French glass door behind me that separates the living room from the hallway. About half an hour passes by. I happen to look up and notice my brother standing in front of the glass door staring at me. I immediately turn to my grandmother and ask her why Willie was not coming in. She shrugged her shoulders and got up to open the door. But to our surprise, as she opened the door, no one was on the other side of the door. Wow. We both looked at each other, confused. As for my brother, Willie never came downstairs. He was still sleeping upstairs in his bed.
Whoa, dude.
Yeah, wow.
That's really, I didn't know which direction that was going to take, you know, if grandma wasn't going to be there, or if she was going to turn and look and her face were like SpaghettiOs or what, you know, but, that was really cool. I guess that would be kind of like a doppelganger,
yeah,
or something, except it wasn't her doppelganger. It was her brother's.
Yeah. That's pretty creepy, man. That is just weird.
Yeah, it really is.
Anytime there's little kids involved, it's just the creepiest
it
to
is,
me,
man. It is. There's something creepy about kids for sure.
Because it should be, they're supposed to be innocent and pure.
Right.
And, you know, but then when they're evil.
Yeah.
Or unnatural. Yeah.
Yeah.
Heebie-jeebies sure. All over. Man.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Now, she does have another story here.
Okay.
She continues. When I was younger, my older brother and I lived with our grandparents on my father's side. My father was a single dad, and my grandparents took care of us when he worked. Every once in a while, my grandparents would go out and visit their friends or family. One particular Sunday, my grandparents left my brother and I alone. As siblings normally do, for whatever reason, we had gotten into an argument, which had escalated quickly and became physical. No one was there to break it up, and the only thing that stopped us was a loud crash, followed by an eerie cackling that came from my grandfather's room. We'd always heard old stories of sightings of a ghost that they all describe as a lady in white. Remembering what we thought were old rumors, my brother and I immediately stopped. We both looked at each other, puzzled and scared, as we proceeded to run as fast as we could down the stairs, bolting out of the house, refusing to go back inside until our grandparents had returned. After a while, we remembered that our grandparents gave us strict orders to stay in the house until they had returned. Frightened, we decided to investigate as we went back inside. To our surprise, not a single thing was moved or broken, and we never found out where the evil, mysterious laugh came from.
Wow.
Dude.
Wow.
Chills, man.
That must have been pretty loud, you know, to interrupt an argument, a fight.
That's true. Yeah. Especially a sibling fight.
Yeah, yeah, especially, yeah, brother and sister fight.
That can get pretty hairy. Pretty,
yeah. Because I've witnessed many of Johnston Jamie Barry fights.
Oh, yeah, man. Holy smokes.
And I'm sure you witnessed many fight with my sister my sister and my brother.
Yes.
So, you know, ironically, my brother and I never fought. Never had any kind of. We never fought, never really raised our voices too much at each other. Never had a physical fight. I think it's because he knew he was older, of course. He's 4 years older, so he knew that if he would have hurt me in any way, then he would have gotten a lot of trouble.
Right. Yeah.
For my dad.
My oldest sister and I never really fought, but you know, myself and my middle sister Jamie, we had some wars, you know.
Yeah,
my sister and I did too. She's the only person I've ever fought, ever. Been in a fight except for my sister. And what she would do? She always had these long fingernails, man. Yeah. And she would just dig them into my forearms.
Yes,
yeah. Into my forearms.
I still have scars, Hub. I still have scars.
Yeah, I think I do too.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know, you know, little kids and their nasty fingernails and whatever was under them.
Yeah.
And those things would just get kind of, you know, a little infected. They just stayed like red. And
it's the worst, man.
Man. Yeah. Well, let me tell you, I could never really fight my sister because being a boy hurting a girl was not going to fly with my dad, you know. But I did get her back, and this one was for all the little brothers out there. It was great because it was a secret revenge that was not unveiled for over 20 years. So I remember I was probably in like first or second grade, and I think I was in second grade, And I was doing homework at the kitchen table, and when we lived at that big white house, Barry, you remember that one?
Oh yeah.
And Hub, you knew too, I'm sure.
Yeah, yeah.
7th Street. So anyway, I'm sitting there at the kitchen table, and I have a mechanical pencil, which, you know, were just amazing wonders when you're that young, because all you got to do is click it, and it comes out of that little metal tube. Well, I was tapping that tube on the table, and I noticed that it kind of put a little dent into the varnish, right? Uh-huh. So then I took it and I applied it, and I kind of like pulled like you would write, and it just kind of peeled off a little layer of that varnish into a little snaky curl. And I'm like, oh, I could write my name in here. But then I thought, well, if I write my name, there's a possibility that I might get in trouble.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what I did, because my sister would, and she denies this, but it's the truth. She would sometimes just like do stuff where she would like hit something or like hit herself and then scream out and yell for dad. Oh, and then yeah. say that my brother and I hurt her or yeah. hit her or whatever.
Yeah.
Completely fabricated.
Yes.
In response to this, in my 8-9-year-old mind, I decided that I'm not going to carve my name. I'm going to play it safe, and I'm going to perfectly do my sister's name, the LeeAnn, and do that a couple of times there at the table, and then just forget about it. And then, of course, later on, my dad, whew, he got so mad. He yelled at my sister. She came running in. She's, oh, do it. She, of course, he spanked her butt. Oh, she's crying bloody murder. And I'm just like, yeah, I got to not fess up to this. I keep quiet. So I kept quiet, and I didn't say a thing ever until we are many years later. And, you know, like 20 plus years later at my grandfather's funeral. And we're all sitting around the table, me and our first cousins, and so my brother, my sister, and my uncle and aunt's kids, you know, the BB side, and we're all sharing stories, and everybody's talking about when they're little kids and all these funny stories about this, that, and the other. And then I said, my sister started talking about this, and I said, I did that. And she slammed her fist down on the table. And she censored herself because we were in a church, but she bit her words right as they were trying to escape. She was going to drop some language that she, you know, probably learned from my mom, as you remember from the episode. But she just got so mad. Everybody was laughing, and I just was.
That is hilarious.
Oh, very.
Well, listen, man. Hey, girls don't fight fair, dude. Girls are dirty fighters, dude.
That's right.
You know, and they are the queens of the mental torment. And, I learned that at a young age, man. I mean, I thank my sister now for making me tough, because if it wasn't for her, I mean, I'd have had a pretty smooth road, because my oldest sister and I, we never had any issues at all, right. You know? Mm-hmm. So she, every bit of angst and anger that my sister had, my middle sister, Jamie, she would just take it out on me, man. And, but, you know, hey, what are you going to do? I mean, you learn quickly. You learn quickly just the mind power of a woman, you know?
That's true. That is true.
That is very true.
You know, and like I said, my brother and I, you know, 4 years apart, never had a fight. Although when we were young, and he would invent games that were basically ways to get around getting in trouble for hurting me. Uh-huh. So, you know, right. We would have kickboxing, yeah. You know, we would have sword fights, right. You know, we would have whatever, all these creative things where he came up with the rules. He came up with a point system, and, you know, it all was to the advantage of the, you know, the 14-year-old who had to play with the 10-year-old or whatever. So. Of course. But my brother and my sister, both are great people. So,
yeah.
And good parents.
And mine as well. Right. And mine as well.
Yes. Mine too. Yeah. Mine too.
You get over that stuff, you know. Hopefully.
Yeah. I think my sister has.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, we're still talking. So, yeah.
That's good. That's a good sign.
All right. Well, let's move on to the next one real quick.
Okay. Let's see. We've got a story from Shelley from Oregon. I worked at a memory care center for years. This center had elderly people with mental issues. I worked there during my training, and we were told when someone dies, shut the mouth and close the eyes and open a window. So I had to ask, do they smell that fast to open a window? No, it's for the soul to leave. Oh, my God, I almost died laughing. Whatever. I didn't believe in that shit. 4 months later, one of my favorite residents died. I prepped the body for the family to view and went on with my night. The next day, my boss was going over my death report with me before we cleaned up his room. We both heard his voice as clear as day laugh. But I've never heard anything like that. But I didn't believe in the paranormal, so I just shut up. We went to his room and started packing, and we heard it again.
Wow.
My boss looked at me dead white and said, please tell me you opened the window. Shit, I didn't. She opened the window and left the room. I stayed behind to finish cleaning. The temp dropped all of a sudden, and the window closed.
Whoa.
Never heard this voice again. Now I am a huge believer, and if someone dies, I always open a window.
Wow.
Man.
Yeah. That's one of those things that, you know, these traditions that we have that get passed down, and nobody kind of knows where they came from. And then you do, like, start questioning it, and then you don't, you stop doing those traditions.
Mm-hmm.
Man, there's a reason why people, you know, had a firm belief in those types of things. And we've had these stories before when people have worked with the elderly or worked in situations where people have, you know, passed on, and there's some weird shit that goes on, you know? One of the, you know, are you guys familiar with, you know, the way that they used to, and then even now in some religions in some countries, they'll allow the body to stay in the home for like a week, and then people come in, and that we used to do that here. We used to, we used to keep the body in the home for a long time, which would just be so strange. I don't.
Well, you know,
to me, it would now. Today.
Yeah, looking at it through our contemporary lens, that would be very strange. But I mean, historically, you know, that's what the wake was about. You know, it was giving the people time to do it. They also, you know, they didn't have the same kind of laws about embalming and understanding that maybe you should, you know, get rid of. Now, I'm sure they would wash the body, I'm sure, and clean it and, you know, but stuff. But, you know, I mean, at the same time, you know, they now it's for health and safety reasons that we don't really do stuff like that. But still, you know, that it was, and like you said, is a big practice in parts of the world where they, you know, in some places they will even bring the bodies out of the tombs and, you know, have like parades or whatever with them, and, you know, as reverence to the ancestors.
Right.
You know, so.
Yeah. You know, the New Orleans funeral, you know, where they parade him down the street. It's pretty cool. That's a it's a pretty cool send off. You know what I mean? To have a
party, that is cool. You know,
have a party, and I'm a big fan of that. And I have been, like I've said before, I've been in the presence of someone who passes away, and there is definitely something that happens, man. And whether you believe in it or not, it's sort of just true. I mean, you feel the person leave, or you feel a shift in the room. I don't know what it is, but I could see why people used to leave the window open or whatever that tradition is. I could understand mm-hmm. that, man, because, mm-hmm. you know, you do feel this sort of like this sort of, you know, energy shift in mm-hmm. a way. It's weird, man. It's really weird. That's yeah.
the lack of presence.
Yeah. Yeah. It there's something to that. I yeah. love these stories like that. Love them.
Yeah. This would just, I guess this might be weird. I don't know, but this is the thought that I had. And I guess at some point I need to put this in a will, but, when I die, which will be a long, 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 long time from now, because I decided that a long time ago. But when I do, I want to be cremated, and then I want my ashes to be mixed into some ink or some paint, and that my friends who are artists can have some of that and then make something and yeah, that's use nice. Me in it, you know?
Yeah.
And then like, also... Yeah. Some of my friends who are like, you know, when I have a party and a celebration, will save some of the of my remains of the dust, and you guys can make lines and snort me up like rock stars.
You better lace that shit with something. I ain't gonna snort. Yeah. Look,
I'm gonna be gone. You know, I won't be able to, you know, lace it with anything. And if I pre-lace it, I think it'll probably go through my system. Might be what kills me. Who knows? But I will get burned away in the process. So really, it's up to one of you guys right now,
man,
to be to lace it.
I'm with freaked anything. Out. I'm freaked out about cremation, man. I don't know why, but like, I guess because I'm just, you know, I've always thought that when I die, I'm gonna occupy a space. You know what I mean? Like, they're going to put my body in the ground, and it's going to be next to my loved ones. And there's going to be, like, if and then in my mind, I think if I'm cremated, what's left of me? Like, there's nothing. And so, and my wife really wants to be cremated, you know? And I'm like, well, what about me? You know, like, you know, in my mind, in this current state, I feel like, If I'm physically not occupying a space, I no longer exist, which is strange because I spend a lot of my time studying and training in Eastern philosophy and but for whatever reason, it's just I can't get away from that idea of the physical space. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, you know, you could also opt to be buried at under a tree or have a tree planted right, in yeah, you,
which we talked
and
about.
You can feed the tree.
Yeah.
And
I like that. I like that idea.
Part of the tree. So, yeah. If for some reason, okay. So now I'm changing my mind. Half of me, will get cremated and then the other half of me will be underneath a tree.
There you go.
So one of you has to burn me up and the other has to bury me in underneath a tree. So I'm guessing
I'll do this.
Who's going to cut you in half?
You both got to do that. Okay. Just get a table saw, right? Who's got a table saw?
I got one.
Barry's got the lawn equipment.
Yeah.
Chainsaw right, maybe
chainsaw,
too.
Yeah. I'm not going to be there, so it doesn't matter. So. You guys decide at that point how you want to handle it.
Well,
so.
we'll do you right, man. We'll do you
all right. All right. Just
I'll get a nice big oak tree planted.
Sounds good.
Okay.
Sounds good. Hey, everybody. You're listening to the What's Your Weird Story podcast. You probably knew that already because you're listening or downloaded to the episode off of your iTunes or your Spotify or whatever place you get your podcast from. We want to thank you for listening. We also want to remind you to like us, follow us, subscribe to us. Make sure that you get your new podcast episode every week. We'd also like to ask you to rate and review so that we can grow our audience and we can have more friends. We can have more stories. So thanks for listening to What's Your Weird Story.
Well, it looks like we've got a write-in from Thomas.
All right.
Where's he coming from? Or does he say...
Thomas is coming from...
I actually know. No. He's coming from Ireland.
He's coming from Ireland. Okay, great.
Cool.
Okay, I'm gonna read this in its entirety.
Cool.
Here you go, buddy. Hope you enjoy the read. Probably could have been written better, but it's all there, all true. Thanks for this. I can't wait to know what people think. Name's Thomas. I'm an animator / character and creature designer, and have been in love with optical and physical anomalies in regards to the spiritual and paranormal ever since I was around the age of 9 or 10, when something very unusual happened to my family and I when flying to Spain many years ago. I've certainly grown to be more of a skeptical person and try to look at things from a rational perspective, though I've had my moments. But I definitely also try to keep an open mind. This particular experience has given me a very balanced outlook on the strange and fantastical, and because of it, I'm grateful. But hey, I'm going to shut up about me and just get to the goodies.
All right.
So, many years ago, not going to say how many because I literally have no clue, my family and I were on a plane to Spain, and overall, it was a pretty terrible vacation involving the resort we stayed at and being a lot cheaper than advertised and too pricey for what it was worth, and my mother slipping and breaking her ankle while I was walking next to a pool, resulting in us staying a lot longer than we'd hoped. But I digress.
I think we've all had those.
Everybody said that the worst vacation ever kind of thing. So.
The flight was so plodding that I thought I'd attempt to make the journey feel shorter by drifting to sleep. And that's saying a lot, since at the time I was a very energetic and patient 9 or 10-year-old boy, and sleeping during the day was a hell no. But before I even had the chance to close my eyes, my sister hastily pushes my shoulder, darting her finger repeatedly at the window next to me, as though it could have been a fleeting sight I may potentially miss. I quickly turned my head and couldn't believe what I was seeing. To this day, the memory is still so vivid. Within around 15 meters of our plane was this massive black object drifting next to us, completely smooth with an almost matted kind of texture, though its shape was what looked to me the most resembling something akin to one of those black magnet toys that were popular in the 90s, early 2000s, but flat. A lot of people I've told this story to would instantly try to compare it to a military fighter jet that takes on a similar aesthetic. However, I knew those things existed at the time and couldn't make any kind of comparison other than the fact that they bear a very slightly similar tone. Aside from that, those particular jets don't typically curve all the way around like a disc, but rather sport a more angular, triangular, or V shape, and I'm almost certain this was something entirely out of this world. So pretty soon, the entire half of that side of the plane had their faces glued to their windows, and after a whooping 20 minutes, the strange craft was still there, but drifted ever so gingerly away, keeping in motion with us, but further away as time moved forward. It moved so carefully, it was almost unnoticeable, but you knew it was further away than before. Funny enough, no one reported it. There were no reassurances from the pilot, and nobody panicked. The atmosphere changed, as though we were incredibly safe or protected even. It felt like the object was following us, though moving away. After about 30 minutes, the object eventually dissipated into the clouds, or from what I remember, became a part of them, as though it gradually faded into the mist. I'll never forget it. Even my younger sister remembers. The experience did such a number on me that I ended up having to see a therapist, but not because it bothered me, but rather I became obsessed. I had to draw it again and again. I needed to show it to people and tell them about it. But what bothered me the most is no one around me at the time ever really talked about what they saw. It was like they'd forgotten it, or at the very least, weren't as impressed. To this day, at the age of 26, I still look to the sky at night for more potential anomalies. Sure, what I'd seen could very well have been something completely normal, but where am I now? I still remember, and I can't explain it.
Wow.
Wow.
I mean, you see that a lot, man. When people see these objects, they become obsessed.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like you're trying to wrap your head around it, and you've never seen anything like that before, and yet there it is, and everyone else is seeing it, and yet maybe nobody wants to say anything because they don't want to, you know, come to the grips of what we're seeing might be real.
Right. They don't want to acknowledge it, and so they just kind of, you know, as we've talked before, you know, push it out of their memory, push it away from their focus, or just kind of like to deal with it, they just forget it.
Right.
Yeah.
Is that,
and, what a, you know?
Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say I can kind of relate to, you know, his obsession about it. Did I tell you guys it was a 4th of July when I thought I saw two UFOs? Have I told you guys that?
No.
Yeah, I was at my in-law's lake house, and my dad had called, and it was night. It was like 10 o'clock. And I went out on the deck, and I was talking to my dad, and I was taking a pee off the side.
As you do.
And,
I mean, there's nothing better than taking a leak outside. I've always
said that. You're right, man.
Yeah.
You're so right. But so I was standing there, and I looked up at the sky. There were fireworks going off, you know. I mean, it was 4th of July. And I look up at the sky, and I see two red lights. And you know, they're kind of close enough together that I glanced at it. I thought it was an airplane. So I looked back down and finished what I was doing. And I think I ended the phone call with my dad, and I looked back up at the sky, and those red lights were still up there, and they were, you know, they looked like they hadn't changed at all. Huh. And so, you know, I kind of put them in comparison to a tree, and they didn't appear to be moving. And then, just like that, what it looked like to me was, well, they faded to black. It looked like they just zipped off further up, just like one went and then the other one went.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I went back inside, and I'm like, hey, I think I just saw something, you know, I was telling, and then, you know, and they were like, yeah. And so then the next day, we're in the golf cart, and we ran into some neighbors, and, I was like, hey, did you happen to see anything? Like, you know, I'm there with my father-in-law. I think he's like, shut up. but no, nobody had seen anything. And so, when I got back to the city, like, I was at work later that next week, and so I did an internet search, and I did the place and the date and the time, you know, and red lights in the sky over Grand Lake, Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. And so I did that search, and there wasn't anything, you know, and then I kept doing it for for 2 years. I think occasionally the thought would just hit me, and I would put that date in and what I saw, and I never did see anything on the internet about it. And then, like, it was like 2 years later, we were at the lake, and the wind was blowing. It was, again, I think it was the 4th of July. And I see this light floating out along the horizon. And, you know, I looked away, and then I looked back, and, you know, it was still there. It was just moving in a straight line, real slow. And I don't know how I figured it out, but it was a Chinese lantern.
Oh, really?
And then it went out. And then the thought dawned on me that those two red lights I saw that night had to have been Chinese lanterns that a couple people lit at the exact same time, you know, probably standing right next to each other, let them go. Mm-hmm. And they probably burn almost exactly the same length of time.
Right.
And one goes black, the other one goes black. And right. and that's what it was.
Interesting.
But did you say that you when they faded out, but didn't you say they like took off?
Well, that's what it looked like. But I think, you know, in my mind, because it just, you know, it didn't just turn off, it faded. So it looked to me like it was going further and further away until you just couldn't see the light anymore.
But
it,
they were stationary for a while, though, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. They were high in the sky. Mm. It was a still night, so they must have just went straight up.
I don't know, man. I can rationalize, I can get on with you with the rationalizing that's what it was. But then again, part of me says, well, maybe not. You know, maybe that's, you need context and you need resolution and that does it for you and you're fine with it. So,
yeah.
Well,
that could be what, yeah.
The possibilities are sort of endless, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, because, like, we know that these one bomber, is that what it is? The B-1 bomber that he was kind of alluding to there?
Yeah, the stealth.
Uh-huh. It's like, we don't know what other possibilities our governments have been working on. You know, yeah, it could, like, for the guy in the story, could have been that, but it could have been a bunch of other things, and it could have been things that are human, or it could be something we can't explain. You know, the same thing with the lanterns. It's like,
yeah,
could be a lot of things. Could be lanterns. Could be helicopters. Could be something that we can't. You know, we don't know. Sometimes when you watch these documentaries, I watched this documentary about this guy out in California, and he made his life work, like, documenting these crazy lights and things over the area that he lived in. And some of it's been debunked and stuff, but, like, some of it you just can't explain.
Right.
You know, and it's like, it seemed like, In a way, it seemed like they were following him around, or maybe he was drawn to them or whatever, but he became obsessed with this idea.
Right. Yeah.
And documenting. He would keep a camera on him at all times and document everywhere he went, and he's seeing these things. And I just think that I keep my mind open to the possibility that it could be real. You know, there's something that we're seeing that, you know, it doesn't fit the description of anything else that we've seen.
Yeah.
You know, and some of it's debunkable, but, man, some of it is just, like, bizarre.
Yeah. Huh. I think it's plausible that you saw Chinese lanterns. I don't think Thomas saw Chinese lantern because it didn't sound like it at all. Yeah. I don't know what he saw, but that's wild. But yeah, with you, man, I think it's plausible. But I also think that maybe not. So
yeah,
I don't know.
It could have been that
one where it was going across. One of them was the second thing was the Chinese lantern, but it could have been those other two. I don't know.
That is very true. I really thought I'd seen something that night. I mean, I really thought I had seen something.
Here's the
you, and I was, yeah.
You did, because you don't know.
That is true.
You saw something. Yeah.
Yeah, I did see something.
And you've seen stuff before. You know, you forgot about when we saw that thing with Big Bird. So
that's right. That's right.
Cool.
Hey, that's a nice t-shirt you got on there.
Oh, thanks, dude. It's brand new. Do you like that? It's one of the official What's Your Weird Story t-shirts.
Where'd you get that?
It's funny that you ask. I just got it off the brand new Spreadshirt.com site for the What's Your Weird Story podcast. There's no www. You just go straight to shop.spreadshirt.com/ what's without the apostrophe WHATS hyphen YER-WEIRD-STORY, and that'll take you right there.
I mean, you can never own enough clothing.
Well, it's true, Barry. There's t-shirts for the ladies, because, you know, they're cut differently. There's hoodies, which are really cool. There's two different kinds of hoodies, and there's also tote bags, so you can tote your stuff.
That's so cool, man.
So if you guys go out to spreadshirt.com, What's Your Weird Story, currently there are two designs, but there will be more going up very soon. So just keep your eyes out for that. And if you decide to get one of their shirts, tag yourself on Instagram to ours or Facebook. Show your love. Show us what you got. Let's see your true colors. All right. So what we've got is this is a recently developed story from our hometown. It's a true crime. It's a murder. And
another facet to the weird little town we grew up in.
Yeah, which was, again, as children growing up, not having any idea how truly weird it was. So, you know, we were sheltered in a good way. But this is a, you know, I mean, this is a very recent development crime there. And so it was kind of a off-the-cuff discussion about it. And our man on the scene and voice of the listener and, you know, local residential Bigfoot expert, Jeff Harbert, is going to be reading off the teletype newscast article from the Daily Times, Kingfisher Daily Times and Press or whatever. Does that still exist? Free Times and Press?
Yeah, it's the Kingfisher Times and Free Press.
Yes.
Yeah, we've got an article here from Easter Sunday back on April 21st of this year. Stephen Curtis Stricker, 62-year-old man, Kingfisher resident, pleaded not guilty Wednesday in Kingfisher County District Court to felony charges of first-degree murder with deliberate intent and desecration of a human corpse for his alleged role in the death and dismemberment of his live-in girlfriend earlier this month. Stricker was arrested Friday, April 5th, by Oklahoma State Bureau of Investigation agents at the Kingfisher Police Department and has been incarcerated since then in Kingfisher County Jail on $5 million bond.
Wow.
Wow.
Wow. And you say he's 62?
I don't want him out.
He's 62? Is that what you said?
62. God dang.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Stricker allegedly told investigators in an April 5th interview that he had argued with his girlfriend, Brenda Babber, who is 56, at their residence in the early morning hours of April 3rd, when Babber fell into the bathtub, hit her head, and died, according to the probable cause affidavit signed by the OSBI agent Rachel Savory. Stricker said he used a kitchen knife to dismember Babber's body in the bathroom of their residence.
Holy shit. Hold
up. So wait, okay, so this guy is now... This guy is claiming that she fell and hit her head.
Yeah. Right, right.
Is that what the OSBI said? Is that what I understood that? Or is it just...
No, this is according to his affidavit.
Okay,
so she fell in the...
his account.
She fell in the bathtub. She hit her head. But then he takes the... He seizes the opportunity to dismember her body. So.
Well, she died, so obviously, apparently... That's what you do next.
Right. It's an option. It's certainly an option.
I mean, yeah, you know,
save money on a funeral. Maybe a cold cut or two.
Yeah.
Yikes. Funerals are expensive. I can tell you that much. But but that's okay. So carry on.
Okay, so he dismembers the body, then burns her remains in the fireplace, and then disposed of the ashes in the garbage. According to his affidavit, Even as Stricker was being interviewed, a team of 10 investigators from the police department, the OSBI, and the state medical examiner's office were unearthing what they believed to be Babber's remains from the backyard and garden of the couple's home. Kingfisher Police Department began investigating Babber's disappearance on Thursday, April 4th, after a call from her sister, Ellen Samuels of Cushing, reported that Babber had called April 2nd and asked for her help moving her out of the Kingfisher home. The sisters made plans to do that 2 days later while Stricker was at work as a cook at a local restaurant, according to Samuels' statements. Samuels also told police,
"Stay away from that place, man.
I hope it's not El Charo." I doubt it is.
The human buttock fajita might have been on special that day.
That's true. So yeah. Samuels told police that she went to her sister's home on April 4th, and no one answered the door, although Samuels believed Stricker was inside. Samuels also told police that her sister and Stricker had a history of domestic violence and that Babber told Samuels that if she ever comes up missing, to call the police. An online search of court records showed Stricker had pleaded guilty to 2 misdemeanor charges of domestic abuse in Kingfisher County District Court in 2011, for which he received a suspended sentence. A third allegation of misdemeanor domestic violence in 2012 triggered a motion to revoke Stricker's suspended sentences, and he was ordered to serve 90 days in the county jail. Kingfisher Police Chief Dennis Baker said his department had investigated no reports of domestic altercations involving Stricker and Babber. When police conducted a welfare check at the home on April 4th, Stricker was there and told officers that Babber had been home in bed when he left for work, but was gone when he arrived home, and he did not know where she was. Police were told that Babber suffered from lupus and COPD, a chronic lung disease, and could not drive or walk without assistance. Her walker and recently filled medicines were still in the home, as was her dog, according to the police report. A neighbor told police on April 4th that Stricker allegedly had been burning something in his backyard fire pit over the last few days and also had been messing around in the garden, which the neighbor found odd since the house was slated to be purchased and demolished as part of the city's flood buyout program.
So he might have been trying to get out of there before they turned it into.
Yeah.
Wow. What were you going to say?
I don't know where she is.
Yeah.
I don't know where she went.
Well, he clearly loved her to put her in the garden, right? To feed the vegetables.
Yeah, that is true. That is true.
Yes. And obviously, and according to his story, he is not a murderer. He is just a dismemberer.
Right.
So, you know, he did care.
God, that, you know, I understand that domestic violence is, the mind of an abused person is twisted as far as they don't understand that sometimes logically it doesn't make sense to stay. But like, if you've told your sister or people around you that this person is capable of killing you, why not get the fuck out of there?
Well, she was trying to. She was trying to. I know. You know, but that's the thing. It's like, that's why her sister was coming down. But unfortunately, it was too late. You know?
Yeah.
And that's the problem with a lot of, I mean, any kind of domestic abuse, whether it's from either partner, or you should just get out. Because quickly. It's all about behavior patterns, you know? And unfortunately, people who have been in domestic abusive relationships or any kind of abusive relationships tend to fall back into those with other people because, that's behavior patterns that, and we as human beings, we write these behavior patterns in our brain. And that's a lot of times why we have self-destructive behavior patterns. Just establish these things for us. And it becomes a pattern
and it becomes like a part of, like, some people live for that shit. I mean, I've known people that love, you know, just hating the person that they're with. It's like, you know, part of the thing, you know. I just don't understand it, you know.
Yeah, that is crazy.
But, you know, I mean, you have to applaud the sister for doing everything she did. It's just unfortunate that it wasn't, that they, you know, it's unfortunate that the day that they picked is, it sounds like the day that she probably died.
Yeah. And that kind of makes you wonder if, you know, they got into a fight and she's like, well, yeah, my sister's coming up here to get me and I'm leaving for good.
Yeah.
Right.
And that was, and like, he believed her. And
yeah. Yeah. You know, I moved up to Milwaukee to marry my wife, and I lived there for 5 years. And, you know, the Jeffrey Dahmer thing was always something that intrigued me a bit, you know, and that idea of someone being dismembered is just like, it's horrific. And it's oddly fascinating for whatever reason. People are drawn to those stories, and of course I'm drawn to those stories. I'm like fascinated by that stuff, but it's a morbid curiosity, you know. And it's like, it's disgusting, and I can't understand, you know, even the fit of rage that you must have to be in to make something like that happen is I just am baffled by it, you know. It's like, that doesn't make sense, especially in a small town like Kingfisher America, you know, where it just, you like to think that things like this don't happen, you know.
That is so true.
But yeah, just, you know, it goes to show that it does happen everywhere, you know.
Yeah,
sadly.
Yeah, on the you know, the dismemberment you were speaking of, Barry. I don't know, you know, and you know. I think I've thought about it before, actually.
Yeah.
And how I would feel, you know, it would be, I mean, if I had to do that ever, it would be, I could feel the feeling in my chest and just, I mean, just the chore in front of you of what you were going to have to do, and you were going to have to just push yourself on to make those cuts. And I can't, how could you do that? How could you cut up like a chicken?
Yeah. Right.
Your loved one or somebody that you saw every day, and to be able to just desecrate their corpse.
Yeah. You'd have to flip that switch, man. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
that's
totally.
That's what you hear whenever you hear about these people that do that. Like, the dismemberment process for a lot of these people that do this is a process that, you know, often they don't like, but they just like get in that mode where like it's got to happen, and they just shut off, you know, and they just do it.
Just total job.
Right. It's like, I think that's part of the reason why I am fascinated by those stories, is because, you know, I watch a lot of these crime stories, and I try to put myself in. I think it's because the line between being free and being locked up is a pretty narrow line for some people. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like that switch gets flipped, and all of a sudden now you're a criminal. And you see it happen all the time. I just watched a story about a lady that ran her husband off the road. She found out he was cheating on him, and in a fit of rage, turned her car around. He was on a motorcycle. She turned her car around to get on the other side of the road. And she was so in a fit of rage, she didn't understand that she actually ran him off the road. Like, in her memory, she doesn't remember her hitting him. She thinks he just ran himself off the road. And that's not what happened. And now she's in prison, and she can't believe that she did that. And it's just what makes a person flip, you know? I mean, there's a difference between a person like that and a serial killer, obviously, because of the psychopathic sort of characteristic. But
that's one of those things why there is such a in many places the, you know, a crime of passion.
Right.
Where it's like, it's, you know, I mean, it's still a crime. It's still terrible and it's horrible and it should not have been committed. But it's also like understood, I guess,
right,
that in this state that logic is and thinking correctly is just gone. Mm-hmm. And it was a momentary lapse. And that's why, you know, some people who are not normally sociopathic, and they do something like that where they kill somebody and then they realize immediately that what they've done afterward, you know, they blank out during the whatever it is, and then they realize what it is, you know. And I'm not, and by all means, there's no excuse for hurting another human being,
right,
for killing them, or you know, anything like that. There's no excuse. There's no excuse to do that. But that's why, I mean, there, at least at one point, I don't know if it's still like a valid thing, but you know, there was definitely crimes of passion, quote unquote, were treated differently historically, right, in the past.
Well, that's true, certainly in Texas where this story took place, because she's found guilty. They gave her a minimum sentence of 2 years, which is pretty lenient, you know.
That is.
But when you go and you hack somebody's body up, I mean, you're taking it on to now this is we're leaking into a situation where this person is doing this voluntarily and knows quite well what they're doing.
Well, when you do something like that, you're covering, I mean, it's obvious he was trying to cover up the crime, you know, and that's what he was doing. He was burning all the whatever it was, and I'm sure it smelled horrible. You know, and he's at messing around his garden, which he didn't do, and the neighbor caught on to it, which, you know, I got to say, though, well-written article from the Times and Free Press there.
Yeah.
Yeah, they do great work. I'm a loyal subscriber.
Are you Hub?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, actually, my mom gets me, this is one of my Christmas presents.
Wow.
Yeah. I can stay in the loop with the goings-on in town. And
oh, that's great.
I see all the good stuff, the court records and all the sports teams.
When you brought this up, I think you had sent us a link or something about this. Mm-hmm. Is that right? A couple of weeks ago or something?
Yeah, I think that's right.
Right.
I think that's right.
And I just sort of skimmed over the story. I didn't know the logistics of it. I actually thought it was a young girl. I didn't know, you know, that they were older. I mean, you know, you usually see this with younger folks, you know, but.
Yeah, that is true.
But wow. What a story.
Yeah. Thank you for everybody for writing in and sharing your stories. You know, we don't get to have our normal discussion with you, the person who experienced it, but it does prompt some really cool discussions between us and, you know, some memories that we've forgotten and stuff like that. So it's really cool.
Yeah,
it is really cool. And I just want to say thanks to everyone who wrote in. And if you're not sure if your story is great or if it doesn't need to be a long story, a short story will be fine. So keep those stories coming. We appreciate it, guys.
All right. Well, thanks for listening, and we will see you next week. And that will be some we got a good one, guys. Next week, that's our buddy Head Cheese.
Oh, yeah.
Get ready for the head cheese.
Wow.
All right. Thanks for listening to the What's Your Weird Story podcast. Thanks for writing in. Remember to write some reviews and subscribe and follow us on all of the social media things and all your platforms, and tell your friends and tell everybody. Get some T-shirts. Join the Facebook page. Spread the gospel of weirdness. Move down to here to Weirdsville and share your own stories. So thanks. Have a good week, and we will see you next time. Be safe.
Be weird.
As always, if you have a weird story, we want to hear it.
If you have a lot of them, we want to hear them all.
We can't do this podcast without your invaluable contributions.
Whether it's sharing your stories,
listening,
rating,
and spreading the word about the podcast. Thanks for listening. Till next time, be safe.
Be weird.
The stories presented on the What's Your Weird Story podcast are, to our knowledge, true experiences that our guests have had. We can't take the time to research all claims made, and besides, it's just not as fun.